I think the key to a good novel is that there are characters that you really like and you care about. They don't have to be perfect, and in fact, they often are more interesting when they are not perfect. And so it was a pleasure for me to read Norman Gilliland's latest book. Norman wears a lot of hats at Wisconsin Public Radio, hosts the Midday University of the Air, Old Time Radio, Drama. He's also one of our wonderful readers on Chapter a Day, of course, and he's also a talented novelist. Interviewed him for his the novel that that he published just prior to the one we're going to talk about today. His third novel is Down East Ledge. It was just released this week, and it's full of characters that really, really get under your skin. And stay there. Norman, thanks for coming over.
A pleasure, Larry.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you with us. By the way, let me remind listeners, if you want to join in, maybe you've read Norman's other books. Maybe you have some questions about those books. Maybe you have some questions about this novel. Maybe you want to talk about what makes for good literature, what really draws you into a story, makes you care about the characters, or maybe you're working on a book. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Now, your first two novels, one was Sand Mansions and the other was Midnight Catch. We talked about Midnight Catch. Those were historical novels, and this one is contemporary. Why the change?
Well, you know, I live in this time period, and I thought it's about time for me to look around and see what's going on.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. But was it hard? Was it easier to write or harder to write?
Well, it was easier in some ways because you don't have to do all the research and make sure that you get the car fenders right and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it was easier. It was harder maybe in terms of thinking, okay, well, you don't have this historical framework to work with. You're kind of flying free here. What do you do with that?
Yeah, I would think that would be challenging. And also, you pick, oh, my gosh, for your main character, you pick Amber, who's a young woman in her early 20s. You are neither of those.
Thank you for being so observant.
So wasn't that had to be a challenge?
Well, you know, I knew it was a challenge. It was a challenge that I sort of systematically took up because I had written scenes, of course, between men in my other novels and between men and women, and I'd even written some scenes that had just women. I mean, in Midnight Catch, there's an early scene that has there's just five women in it.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, let's take it to the next step and just see the world as far as possible through the eyes of a woman.
Yeah, a young woman at that. She's an interesting character. I really like her.
Yeah, I liked her too, and I don't know exactly where she came from. I know some of her, you know, immediate ancestors, you could say. But yeah, I don't know exactly where Amber came from. The best I can come, it's sort of dodging the question, but the best I can come is to say it's a kind of channeling.
Ah.
You just kind of, the words and the thoughts just start coming.
So you really purposely started out to, okay, I'm going to write from the point of view of a 20-year-old woman.
Yeah, and it also, you know, gave me a little bit of a, she's a kind of an old-fashioned girl. She's, well, like her whole town, Ashton, Maine. She's kind of behind the times, although she's even more behind the times in some ways than some of the other people there.
Yeah. You mentioned Ashton, Maine. That's where the story takes place. Tell us about that town, Ashton, Maine.
Well, Ashton is way down east, and down east, of course, refers to the coast of Maine, and the farther east you go, you're going traditionally downwind. And so this is the last stop before Canada. And it's a small town, maybe 500 people or so. It's not too far from Eastport. And it's a place where, as you said at the top of the hour, Larry, people just get stuck in life. That's what the ledge is, a literal place, but it's also a metaphorical place where people just get stuck. And some of them stay stuck and some of them get unstuck one way or the other.
Yeah, and it's so the title Down East Ledge is that.
I mean, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, and as I say, a literal landform plays an important part in our story, Larry. Yeah. But it's also the kind of the overarching concept of these people, so many of them in this town, that don't know what to do with their lives, or they even have stopped thinking about that.
Yeah. In Midnight Catch, I remember that was set in Florida, and that's where you grew up in Florida. Do you have a connection with Maine as well?
Yeah, Maine is very much in my blood. I've gone there most summers, for at least part of the summer, since 1969, actually.
Wow.
I worked several summers there on Mount Desert, which is where Bar Harbor is, and various other fascinating places. And in fact, a couple of the chapters in the book are set on Mount Desert. But this town of Ashton resembles in some ways my wife's hometown, which is a place, of course, I've also spent a lot of time.
Yeah. That's kind of a cool place. It reminded me of, there's a few towns in Wisconsin, actually, that that I thought about, and it kind of reminded me of those towns where you've got a sort of on one side of the there's two sides of the track, so to speak.
Yeah, in this case, the two sides of the river. And that name Ashton, by the way, actually, there's no other connection, but that name Ashton comes from our own Ashton, Wisconsin, which is right down the road here.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's certainly, I mean, there are two, yeah. There's a wealthy side, sort of, and a not-so-wealthy
side.
That's
right. Yeah, and that's pretty typical in Maine. That's one of the things I find fascinating about the state, is that contrast between wealthy and not wealthy, and the fact that they mingle. And you can have these famous, wealthy, influential people just mingling with people who might make, you know, $10,000 a year. And because of the way they work together, they know each other. It's just slightly different from a lot of places.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I guess there's a temporary nature to the wealthy side in terms of the, you know, their summer homes.
That's right.
The fall.
Yeah, they're not around most of the year, most of them. They come and go, and they kind of, in a way, keep their lives to themselves. They interact with the summer people, locals mostly, just, you know, in a service context.
Mm. Norman Gilliland, our guest today, he has authored his third novel. This one's called Down East Ledge, a wonderful story told from the perspective of Amber, a young woman in her early 20s. And I really enjoyed reading it. I know you're going to as well. Give us a call with your questions or comments. Maybe you want to ask him about the book or previous books, or maybe you want to talk a little bit about writing in general. The number 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Now, you're a sailor, are you not?
Well, after a fashion. I do what I can, Larry.
And sailing and being on the water obviously plays a large part in this story and for several of the characters. What does that water, what does it mean to you?
Well, as Amber says, well, she's kind of afraid of it. And I think there's some justification for that for anybody. Anybody out on the water, if the conditions get extreme enough for them, you start to get a little nervous. You know, Robert Redford in All Is Lost, it isn't the prime example from the films of late. But it represents a couple of things. For her, it represents this kind of challenge that she has to overcome if she's going to kind of move on to the next step, you know, especially with that friendship that she has with Karen. And it also represents the whole lifestyle of so many of the people around her. I mean, her father has had experience on the water. Her brother, you know, designs boats, although he's sort of stuck on his own ledge there, too. It's just, I mean, part and parcel of life. They breathe that salt every day.
Yeah. And you mentioned, so there's Amber and there's Karen. You mentioned Karen, who's probably the other main character in the book, along with her mother, Geneva.
Yes, who gets her name from our own Lake Geneva. Those are the two name Wisconsin connections in the book.
Oh,
I just thought it sounded like a really neat name for a woman.
I actually like it a lot. And then Dr. Walt Sterling.
Walter Sterling, yeah. And he is, let's say, inspired by a couple of men that I knew back a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And in a way, this book is a little bit of an act of contrition because I did know a man back in the 70s who was very much like Walter Sterling in that he had been a very distinguished scientist. He had done some pioneering work with artificial mm-hmm. vitamins, that kind of thing, synthetic vitamins. And he had, by the time I got to, quote, know him, he had pretty much lost it all so far as we could tell, which is to say he never spoke. He could walk around, but he just kind of like stared at the floor most of the time.
Mm.
I will tip the plot this much to say there are twice in the book when Dr. Walter Sterling speaks, and those words are verbatim the only words I ever heard this other guy say.
Oh, my goodness. I remember those words from the book,
too.
Judah's shaking, nodding. Yeah, I remember those words, too.
those really were uttered. And it's an act of contrition because I wished and wish in retrospect that I had actually reached out to him more at the time. I just thought, well, he's not going to know who I am. He's not going to know what I'm saying. He's not clued in at all, you know. But in fact, one time he actually smiled at me and I thought, wow, there's something going on there, but I just didn't pick up on it. And so this is, in a way, it's kind of a rhapsody on that situation.
Mm. David in Mount Horeb, thank you for calling. Hello. Oh, I suppose I better turn the volume up here. David, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, hi, Larry, and your guest is the author Norman, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just so lucky to turn your show on. I've got a huge Maine connection. My grandfather is from Chicago, and he built a home, my great-grandfather, on Chibig Island, which is Casco Bay,
mm-hmm.
Over 100 years ago. So we unfortunately had to sell that house a few years ago, but we still go out to Ocean Park, but I'm extremely familiar with that whole social dynamic. Chibig, is the largest island in Casco Bay near Portland. The main industry is lobstering, and you know, my dad was president of an insurance company. But in the old days, it doesn't work as well today. Everyone got along. The big shots got along with the people that were building, were lobstermen, and unfortunately, that's changed quite a bit. That dynamic, but I just know exactly where Norman's coming from. It sounds like a book to take a look at.
Yeah, well, thanks, David. Yeah, as I said earlier, I don't know of any other place quite like that where you could have, you know, a Rockefeller, you know, having a conversation with somebody who has not anything like that kind of wherewithal. And those are names that you see very commonly in that part of Rockefeller, Ford, Astor. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of people who were highly placed in government, too. I mean, and in the media, too. You never know who you're going to bump into there.
On the boat going to our island, the original ferry, if we didn't take Casco Bay lines, was a converted lobster boat. And you went back in the early, in the 60s, and you might be sitting next to Ellen Goodman has a house out there. She's a well-known author, and but everyone got along, and even the highfalutin people. We all drove old cars on the island because they had to stay there. Now that's changed with everything today, and people bring over their expensive cars. But everybody wore old clothes. You wore the old flannel. You know.
Even the well-to-do, yes, tended to dress down.
With the head of CBS Sports was there, and you'd never know.
Yeah.
And that's why they got along, because the locals would figure you out real quick.
And, yeah.
So thank you so much.
Thanks, David. Yeah, there's a funny story that I think is true about a little bookstore in Maine. And a guy comes up to to get a book that he had ordered, and she says, your name? And he says, Mailer. And she says, first name, Norman. And it's like, you know, okay. And what book was it you ordered? And it was, you know, everything. Is, they're just so used to those names there.
Yeah, that's wonderful. David, thank you. I was thinking back to a good friend of mine, Kate Johnson, went with her sister. They decided to visit Maine. There was a friend that they were going to visit, and they wound up having tea with Mrs. George Bush, the senior.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised, yeah.
And just, she said, what a lovely woman. And then, you know, she said, well, I was just like, she was a normal person. And I said, well, I think she is a normal person.
Well, and that's actually how it came about that one night. I kind of oversimplify this for the sake of making it sound exciting, that I actually cooked dinner for the Vice President of the United States. I did work at a restaurant there for 6 summers. And as I say, a lot of those kind of clients at the restaurant were those names. And one night we, because this was Nelson Rockefeller, and because he was born in Seal Harbor, which was just a mile and a half down the road from this restaurant, he would come around every now and then. His brother David, maybe once a summer. And so on that particular occasion, we got the whole Secret Service and the whole bit. It was really kind of interesting.
Kind of fun.
Yeah.
Norman Gilliland, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hope you'll stay tuned. Coming up at 11:45, we'll enjoy a fascinating discussion with the author of Three Squares, The Invention of the American Meal. Right now, though, we're talking with Norman Gilliland about his most recent novel just out this week. It's called Down East Ledge. Great to have him along, and thank you so much for listening in. Questions or comments, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have a thought about what makes good literature or question. What do you think Norman thinks about that? What really draws a story to you? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'd certainly love to hear from you. You deal the topic of dementia is it's a tough topic to deal with. But Walt has a fair amount of charisma, which I think was kind of cool.
He does, and it's, I suppose, something you could call kind of an ambiguous charisma, because people sort of get out of an experience with him what they want, and yet he does have this way of getting them off their ledges. It's kind of, not all of them, obviously, but some of them. There is some kind of a magic there that we can't explain, but it certainly is effective.
Yeah, it definitely is, and he's part of this family that is, it's kind of a prickly... A bunch.
Yes. Yeah, it really is. It's a very dysfunctional family. And I think that part of that, of course, is the resentment that comes up. It's not justified, of course, but it's, I think, perfectly natural when a member of the family, you know, kind of slides out of communication like that. And and there's always unfinished business, things left unsaid, things left undemonstrated, and people in the family feel kind of shortchanged. As I say, it's not justified, but I think that's a common reaction, and we see that here.
Yeah, we really do, and it's kind of hard. Well, you know, figuring it out is, you know, it takes a little bit of time here. I'm looking at. Looking at Karen and saying, why are you so mad? that's kind of the fun part of, you know.
She's kind of funny mad, you know. I mean, she's entertaining, but I don't know where she's going to go next.
That's for sure. Karen in Chippewa Falls, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yeah, nice to be talking to you, Norman.
Thank you.
Who makes the determination, and how is it determined whether a book gets regional promotion, whether it becomes a national bestseller, even international? Which publishers, and how do the publishers make those determinations?
Well, I work with the University of Wisconsin Press, and they do disseminate their catalog and their sales force actually around large parts of the world. And so they would make those marketing decisions. But regardless of the publisher, regardless of the author, more and more of the burden of that falls on the author. So you want to promote your book, or you actually want to publish a book with us, how are you going to promote it? I mean, that's the question that authors get asked. And you see, obviously, major authors going out, you know, doing book tours and things like that. How effective are those in terms of actually marketing a book? Really hard to say, because I think most of it has to do with raising the profile, not the immediate sales that you get, you know, at a library or a bookstore somewhere or a mall.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty risky.
It depends on how much you invest. Your time, I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's dicey. Yeah. Yes, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I was thinking back and trying to remember. Oh, my gosh, I'm blanking on the Wisconsin author whose her work was The Deep End of the Ocean.
Oh, Jackie Michaud.
Jackie Michaud. Oh, my goodness. Jackie, I'm sorry if you're listening. just off the top of my head. I mean, to be the first book on the Oprah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That'll do it.
Talk about striking gold. Yeah, that's right.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
Bob in Union Grove, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Norman, I just love your voice, your radio voice. When you talk on Chapter a Day, it's wonderful.
Thank you.
I was wondering if there's an upcoming break that you're going to be reading one of your own books on Chapter a Day. And I was also wondering what progress is being made toward releasing more of the Chapter a Day or making Chapter a Day programs more available to the public?
Well, the second question I'll take first. That's more of a Jim Fleming question, because he's the executive producer for Chapter a Day. And it's a big, complicated question, because it gets into rights. And a lot of times, at least my experience has been, and I clear the rights for most of the chapter books, my experience has been that if it's a book that's been out for a long time, they don't bother to get back to you because they're not that interested in selling it. So that can be a long, difficult trail, those cold cases, as I call them. As far as one of my books being on Chapter a Day, with me reading it, well, that's not my decision either. However, I frankly really enjoy hearing other people read my stuff. And in the case of this one, Down East Ledge, although I really enjoy reading it out loud and leaving it up to the audience to kind of take that little jump of willing suspension of disbelief that it's a guy reading, you know, a girl's words, it'd be a lot of fun to hear one of our female readers do this book or, you know, read it. And but that's totally out of my hands. So just stay tuned.
Yeah, well, that's another follow-up question, if you have time.
Sure.
That, you know, why you don't use a male and a female voice, not the individual, but two different individuals to get that effect.
Sometimes we have done that. If there are letters, for example, back and forth, we've done that. But Chapter a Day, the concept, the original concept, and I think it's still a good one, and it's so simple and timeless, is one voice reading the book. And the difficulty, I think, maybe the hardest thing about Chapter, other than editing those books, is doing all the characters in a conversation, male, female. Actually, frankly, the hardest for me is if you have like three males who are the same age, same kind of general experience, and they're all in a dialogue, how do you sort them all out? But
well, you do a wonderful job of it. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. You know, I once envisioned myself reading a Chapter a Day book. And so what I did was I thought, well, I'm just going to read. I'm going to try it and see how well I can do. And so I picked up a book and I started reading it out loud and trying to do the different voices. And I thought, you know, I don't want to really embarrass myself.
Well, some are easier than others, but I've never had one that I thought was really easy. Let's put it that way.
No, I really got a respect for you and everybody who does the chapter books, because you are so good at it. Cool. I mean, and when I listen to a book on tape from others, I think, oh, man, this is not Norman Gilliland or Jim Fleming.
Let alone Carl Schmitt.
or yeah, let alone Carl Schmitt. I mean, it's really apparent that we have an outstanding group of readers.
Yes, and it takes a lot of honing, you can be sure. Yeah, and a certain amount of humiliation on my part, you know, say, oh my gosh, that really sound as bad as I think it does. Fortunately, usually it sounds a little bit better. But
yeah, I know.
As you know, it's an interesting exercise to hear yourself, your voice coming back at you. You know, we get kind of used to it in this business, but when you're reading something really creative like that, it's a little different.
Yeah, absolutely. We have Nelson in Round Lake, Illinois, up next. Thank you for calling, Nelson. What's on your mind? Nelson, are you there?
His air is there.
His air is there, but he's not there. I don't know what's going on. He must not be hearing me. And I swear I have the volume turned up, too.
Well, I can hear that.
Well, I'll tell you what. Nelson, are you there? I'm going to give you one more chance. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll drop him and then maybe he'll call back and we'll get him on the next time around. You can join in, by the way, too, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call or email us at talk@WPR.org. What makes for compelling fiction?
I think character that's well-rounded, you know, three-dimensional, that has pretty clearly a mind of his or her own. And I think, I mean, there are all kinds of ways of writing fiction, but one way is to take a main character and tell us, what does that character want, and do we sympathize with him or her in the effort to obtain that? And then what are the difficulties that this person encounters as they go along the way, and will they succeed or fail in the long run? I mean, that's kind of the oldest, you know, story in the world.
And that gets repeated in
endless variations.
Endless variations, but it cannot, well, I don't know that it's always entertaining, but
we hope it's entertaining.
It certainly is in your case. I like this book the best of all of your books,
well,
by the way.
Yeah,
I really think you've done a wonderful job with the characters. Make it really want us to care about these characters.
Well, thanks. And the thing about Amber is that in some ways, well, even she uses that word for herself at times. She's kind of clueless. She's learning this stuff the hard way. A lot of it has to do with friendship and how difficult it can be for some people in particular.
Yeah.
And for Amber to make friends and keep friends.
Yeah, I'm amazed at how well it works in the case of this book, because Amber and Karen are different.
Really, yeah,
different people.
The literary term would be foil, but I didn't write it in the sense that Amber needs a foil, so let's come up with some. You know, those Karen just came to me as naturally as could be. And I couldn't even tell you exactly from where right now, though she's got a little bit in common with some people I have known long ago.
Yeah. So was the I'm always interested in what is the kernel or what gets a writer to say, oh, you know, I want to write this book.
Well, again, it was my experiences in that part of Maine with people who are like that and encountering the world with a kind of awe, is what it comes down to, and sorting it all out. And so, I have to put it this way too. It took a long time before I had the perspective to write it, because we're talking about experiences that go back, dare I say it, 40 years, some of them.
Wow.
And I've been wanting to write a Maine book ever since I was first there, but it just took me that long to really put everything in place.
To really get the feel,
to
have it in Maine inside you, in a way.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So you really know it?
To feel that you know it, or just feel that there's something spontaneous that you want to say about it, which is why, you know, I've only been in Wisconsin here at WPR for a mere 30 years. So in another 10, maybe I'll be able to write a Wisconsin book, which for me right now would be a lot harder.
Is there a cauldron?
There is. Yeah, they're very much. There are two candidates for that. There is a place called Reversing Falls, which is not too far from Eastport, which is very much the way the cauldron is, because it literally the tide comes in and then spins around on a dime and comes right back out that fast on the rocks. But also the second biggest whirlpool in the world is not too far from there.
Oh.
Which I have not yet seen, but one of these days.
One of these days. Deborah in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Norman.
Hi.
One of my prized possessions is an old-time radio hour T-shirt.
Oh, great.
By naming that song.
Congratulations. They're hard to get.
I've always been an adventurer. I'm from the UP of Michigan, and I lived on the East Coast. I sailed to England from Florida.
Then
wow. I sailed to the Virgin Islands, and I fell in love with the Virgin Islands, and I fear that it's overdeveloped now. But anyway, I spent the summer in Maine, in Sunset, Maine, in a renovated boathouse.
Great.
And when the moon was full, the water came right up under it. And every morning I'd watch these fishermen go out to their boats, no matter what time it was. Their lives were dictated by the tide.
Yeah.
Because they were fishermen. But I found it. That I find Maine people very refreshing. I learned you don't have to be sweet and wonderfully outgoing and nice to be, a really nice person. You have some people are just tough by nature because they have to be. And I just love the fog. I fell in love with the fog.
You know, so did I. Coming from Florida, I did too, right away.
Yep. But I have this idea for a story, and I'd like to present it to you sometime. But I just feel in my gut it would be, it's just a story that needs to be told.
That's the best way to write. Win or lose, that's the best way to write.
I got a little of that. Did you read the book, The Secret Life of Lobsters?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I think it was our own Cynthia Schuster who gave me that book.
And there's a little bit about what Deborah's talking about there. I'm sort of getting a little, and certainly got that from your book, in the fishermen or the lobstermen. They're like that. I mean, they can be crusty, but they don't have to. You like their honesty and their directness.
It is a slightly different way of interacting with people that you find there. I mean, it can be a little frosty, a little formal,
yeah,
a little standoffish, at least at first. But there's this wonderful color behind all of it.
Yeah. Deborah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
yeah,
Deborah.
Appreciate the call. We have Nelson. Oh, Nelson in Round Lake, Illinois. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Back again.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes,
now we can.
Okay, I was just asking about whether there was any nonfiction that Norman had written, and if so, what are the names of the books?
Yes, there are two books, both of them actually having to do with classical music, and one's called Grace Notes for a Year, and the other is called Scores to Settle, and both of them, they're very similar, they're kind of like twin books in a way. Each has 366 one-page stories from what I call the struggle to create great music. There's a lot of color in it, turns out, in the stories of the composers and the performers, and stories of success and stories of abject failure. And I just thought it would be a great idea to bring those out. And I do read from Scores to Settle each weekday morning at 11:30 over on the other side of the glass.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. Well, that's good. I'll look those up.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much. I love that title, by the way. That's a great title.
It's hard to come up with an original great title. When you go on the line here, you find, it's tough competition for the good ones.
We're getting requests from people to say, hey, would Norman read a page or two? Or
I can do that.
Can you?
If you'll excuse my unusually smoky voice today. And you just so you have to take a double jump here to think that this is a young woman speaking, but I hope that she takes over pretty quickly here. This is from actually page 5.
Okay.
What can you say about yourself when you're 23 years old and you've lived practically all your life on the dunning side of Ashton, Maine? I wanted to say during this job interview that I was a world traveler and an Olympic gymnast, but the truth was that I had spent most of those 23 years going to and getting through the Consolidated School in Hixton and getting a B.A. in Family Relations at the University of Maine in Machias. I pretty much sucked at sports. Up until the age of 12, I did some horseback riding, and then Roger Winthorpe's mare ran away with me, causing me to promise God that if he would spare me just this once, I would never again entrust my life to a large, irrational animal. Just as I was promising to become a nun, quite the offer for a lapsed Congregationalist, the horse lurched to a jerky halt and pitched me off, which I figured invalidated the devotional part of the contract, but I was true to my vow about animals. I wasn't even much for the water. I'd gone out in our sailboat with Pop and Brian, poking along the river and into the open water one time, venturing all the way past Eastport, where the islands scatter like stepping stones across the Bay of Fundy. Pop had tried to make a sailor of me, but the whole business made me nervous, and the boat had sat in the yard ever since he and Mom had a hair-raising homecoming in it. Hair-raising for Mom, that is, because she was the one who had to jump overboard and haul it into shore while Pop steered. Once they were dried off and warmed up, he spoke casually of the boom dipping into the water as he pinched into a wind gusting to 50. But that was it for Mom, and she and Pop never went out there in that terror again. Well, that made sense to me. Anything that tries to tip over to get where it's going is not my chosen mode of transportation.
I'm glad you picked that, selected that. That's a wonderful, that really kind of gives you a little insight into Amber.
Where she's coming from.
Where she's coming from. And by the way, your book launch, you had an official book launch.
Yes, Friday, December 6th at A Room of One's Own, 315 West Gorham.
In Madison. Yeah. So
I'll read all of chapter one.
That's Friday at 6 p.m., so the day after Thanksgiving?
No, it's the week.
The week after.
Week and a day.
Mm-hmm. A week and, oh, obviously, yeah, yeah, a week and a day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Norman, this has been a lot of fun.
It's always fun hanging out with you, Larry.
And I really, really liked your book.
Thank you.
It was a fun read. I like the cover, too.
That's Maine.
That's Maine.
It's actually done by a guy named Jeremy Parker, who worked for the UW Press but just moved to Maine.
And, you know, the colors are Maine, too, kind of?
They are, yeah. They're a little different, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's the real color of the original photograph.
That's a wonderful cover, and what's inside is pretty wonderful, too. Thank you, Norman.
Always a pleasure, Larry.
Norman Gilliland, who wears a lot of hats here, as we were talking about at Wisconsin Public Radio, has got a winner here. His third book is called Down East Ledge. It's a novel, and I hope you will take a look at it and give it a read. And a week from Friday, I hope you'll, if you're in the Madison area, A Room of One's Own bookstore, 315 West Gorham Street. You can get a chance to meet Norman and hear him read the entire chapter one, in which we meet the memorable denizens of Ashton, Maine. Oh, man, such a treat to be able to dive into a well-crafted novel. The characters, the descriptions, the themes are really satisfying. As satisfying as a wonderful banquet, as a matter of fact. And coming up next, we're going to talk about banquets, so to speak, the history of American meals. It's a fascinating story. It's as fascinating, I think, as a well-written novel. And it's coming up next right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.